One.
What we've been trying to do is to try and see what would you have to do to design an AI system that was as smart as a two-year-old, basically, right? That could do the kinds of things that two-year-olds can do. And it's kind of striking that the very best state-of-the-art systems that we have that are great at playing Go and playing chess and maybe even driving in some circumstances are terrible at doing the kinds of things that every two-year-old can do.
Two.
And the idea is maybe we could look at some of the things that the two-year-olds do when they're learning and see if that makes a difference to what the AIs are doing when they're learning. So one way that I think about it sometimes is it's sort of like, you know, if you look at the current models for AI, it's like we're giving these AIs hyper helicopter tiger moms. There's a programmer who's hovering over the AI and saying, oh, yeah, yeah, you got that one right. That one's a cat. That one's a dog. That one's another cat. That one's another dog.
Three.
Or you have the AI that's saying, oh, good, your Go score just went up, so do what you're doing there. But nope, now you lost that game, so figure out something else to do. And as you might expect, what you end up with is AI systems that are very, very good at doing the things that they were trained to do and not very good at all at doing something different.
Four.
So, you know, they can play chess, but if you turn to a child and said, okay, we're just going to change the rules now so that instead of the knight moving this way, it moves another way, they'd be able to figure out how to adopt what they're doing. And it's much harder for AI systems to do that. Now, one of the big problems that we have in AI is what's come to be called the alignment problem, is how can you get the AI values to be aligned with the values of humans?
Five.
So the famous example of this is the paperclip apocalypse, where you try to train the robot to make paperclips and it just goes around and turns everything in the world, including all the humans and all the houses and everything else, into paperclips. If you've got this kind of strategy of here's the goal, try to accomplish the goal as best as you possibly can, then it's really kind of worrying about what the goal is, what the values are that you're giving these AI systems.
Six.
And one idea people have had is, well, are there ways that we can make sure that those values are human values? But of course, one of the things that's so fascinating about humans is we keep changing our objective functions. What counted as being the good thing, the value 10 years ago, might be really different from the thing that we think is important or valuable now. We keep discovering that the things that we thought were the right things to do are not the right things to do, and we change what we do as a result.
Seven.
And it seems as if parents are playing a really deep role in that ability. So if you think about what it's like to be a caregiver, it involves passing on your values. That's a really deep part of it. But it also involves allowing the next generation to take those values, look at them in the context of the environment they find themselves in now, reshape them, rethink them, do all the things that we were mentioning that teenagers do, consider different kinds of alternatives.
Eight.
And it's having a previous generation that's willing to do both those things, that's willing to both pass on tradition and tolerate, in fact, even encourage change, that's willing to say, here's my values, but your job is to figure out your own values. That's what lets humans keep altering their values and goals, and most of the time for good. So the question is, if we really wanted to have AIs that were really autonomous, and maybe we don't want to have AIs that are really autonomous.
Nine.
But if we wanted to have AIs that had those kinds of capacities, they'd need to have grandmoms. They'd need to have someone who would tell them, here's what our human values are, and here's enough possibilities so that you could decide what your values are and then hope that those values actually turn out to be the right ones.
Something that strikes me about this conversation is exactly what you were touching on, this idea that you're going to have one objective function. The AI will have one goal and that will never change.
10.
You look at any kid, right? And I think it's called social reference learning. I mean, they're constantly doing something. Then they look back at their parents to see if their parent is smiling or frowning. Then they do something else and they look back. And this constant touching back, I don't think I appreciated what a big part of development it was until I was a parent. And I just saw how constant it is, just all day doing something, touching back, like 100 times in an hour.
11.
So one piece that we think is really important is this exploration, this ability to go out and find out things about the world, do experiments, be curious. So one thing is to get them to explore, but another thing is to get them to do this kind of social learning. So look at a person who's next to you and figure out what it is that they're doing. And in robotics, for example, there's a lot of attempts to use this kind of imitative learning to train robots. But here's the catch, and the catch is that innovation-imitation trade-off that I mentioned.
12.
We've shown that when you look at kids imitating, it's really fascinating because even three-year-olds will imitate the details of what someone else is doing, but they'll integrate, okay, I saw you do this. I saw this other person do something a little different. I have some information about how this machine works, for example, myself. And the children will put all those together to design the next thing that would be the right thing to do.
13.
So they're constantly social referencing. They imitate literally from the moment that they're born. They're imitating us. They're paying attention to us. They're seeing what we do. But then they're taking that information and integrating it with all the other information they have, say, from their own exploration, and putting that together to try to design a new way of being, to try and do something that's different from all the things that anyone has done before.
14.
As you've been learning so much about the effort to create AI, has it made you think about the human brain differently?
Well, I have to say, actually being involved in the AI project in many ways makes the differences more salient than the similarities. Because over and over again, something that is so simple, say for young children, that we just take it for granted, like the fact that when you go into a new maze, you explore it, that turns out to be really hard to figure out how to do with an AI system.
15.
Or to take the example about the robot imitators, this is a really lovely project that we're working on with some people from Google Brain. They thought, okay, well, a good way to get a robot to learn how to do things is to imitate what a human is doing. So what they did was have humans who were, say, manipulating a bunch of putting things on a desk in a virtual environment. And the robot is sitting there and watching what the human does when they take up the pen and put it in the drawer in the virtual environment.
16.
And it turned out that the problem was if you train the robot that way, then they learn how to do exactly the same thing that the human did. But as I say, and this is always sort of amazing to me, you know, you put the pen 5 centimeters to one side and now they have no idea what to do. But it turns out that if instead of that, what you do is you have the human just play with the things on the desk, you tell the human, I just want you to do stuff with the things that are here. Just play with them. Just do the things that you think are interesting or fun.
17.
And then you use that to train the robots. The robots are much more resilient. So part of it is kind of goes in circles. So it's also for the children imitating the more playful things that the adults are doing, or at least for robots, that's helping the robots to be more effective. I think anyone who's worked with human brains and then goes to try to do AI, the gulf is really pretty striking. And the difference between just the things that we take for granted that, say, children are doing and the things that even the very best, most impressive AI systems can do is really striking.
18.
Now, here's a specific thing that I'm puzzled about that I think we've learned from looking at the AI example. In AI, you sort of have a choice often between just doing the thing that's the obvious thing that you've been trained to do or just doing something that's kind of random and noisy. Those are sort of the options. The amazing thing about kids is that they do things that are unexpected. They're not just doing the obvious thing, but they're not just behaving completely randomly.
19.
A lovely example was that her three-year-old was walking on the campus and saw the campanile at Berkeley. So the campanile is the big clock tower at Berkeley. And he looked up at the clock tower and he said, there's a clock at the top there. There's a clock way, way up high at the top of that tower.
20.
And then he said, I guess they want to make sure that the children and the students don't break the clock. So they put it really, really high up.
It's very funny.
And that's exactly the example of the sort of things that children do. It's not something he's ever heard anybody else say. It kind of makes sense. It's not random. But, of course, it's not something that any grown-up would say. in a sense, it's a really creative solution. And I think that for AI, the challenge is how could we get a system that's capable of doing something that's really new, which is what you want if you want robustness and resilience.
21.
Just take something really simple, like it would be really good to have robots that could pick things up and put them in boxes, right? Like that doesn't seem like such a highfalutin skill to be able to have, and that could pick things up and put them in boxes. And now when you gave it a screw that looked a little different from the previous screw and a box that looked a little different from the previous box, that they could figure out, oh yeah, no, that one's a screw and it goes in the screw box, not the other box.
22.
And it turns out that even to do just these really, really simple things that we would really like to have artificial systems do, it's really hard. And those are things that two-year-olds do really well. And we can think about what is it. On the other hand, you know, the two-year-olds don't get bored knowing how to put things in boxes. So what is it that they've got? What mechanisms do they have that could help us with some of these kinds of problems?
23.
Another example that we've been working on a lot with the Bay Area group is just vision. So just look at a screen with a lot of pixels and make sense out of it. And as you probably know, if you look at something like ImageNet, you can show, say, a deep learning system a whole lot of pictures of cats and dogs on the web, and eventually you'll get it so that it can most of the time say this is a cat and this is a dog. But then you can give it something that is just obviously not a cat or a dog, and they'll make a mistake.
24.
And they won't be able to generalize, even to, say, a dog on a video that's actually moving. So even if you take something as simple as that you would like to have your systems actually, you know, you'd like to have the computer in your car actually be able to identify this is a pedestrian or a car, it turns out that even those simple things involve abilities that we see in very young children that are actually quite hard to program into a computer.
25.
Some of the things that we're looking at, for instance, is with children, when they're learning to identify objects in the world, one thing they do is they pick them up and then they move around, look at them from different angles, look at them from the top, look at them from the bottom, look at your hands this way, look at your hands that way, walk around to the other side, pick things up and get into everything and make a terrible mess because you're picking them up and throwing them around. But it turns out that may be just the kind of thing that you need to do, not to do anything fancy, just to have vision, just to be able to see the objects in the way that adults see the objects.